3, 2, 1. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, tuning in from all around the world. This is Steve Zekas, the Sinatra Suave, host of the one and only Dominate the Deal podcast. Today's guest with me is got quite the resume, to be honest with you. His name is Peter Cazodoy, if I'm saying that right. He is an Inc. 5000 entrepreneur, founder of his company, Gem Advertising. He is a TEDx and keynote speaker and author of his book, House Honest to Greatness, How Today's Greatest Leaders Use Brutal Honesty to Achieve Massive Success. I'm super excited to hear his story. I think he has a very unique message and a great perspective of not only entrepreneurship and how you can build your brand the right way, but also personally, how you can build a great mindset and overcome your limiting beliefs. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our guest, Peter Cazodoy. Thanks for hopping on, man.
Thank you, Steve. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. So before we get into it, you know, we have a lot to get into, obviously. You know, just tell me, like, how your whole, like, quarantine has been. You know, like, how have you been staying positive amidst this whole, like, pandemic? And, you know, how have you been staying sharp?
You know, Steve, I have to be honest, you know, it comes with the territory. Yeah. We've taken this very well. And that's because just given my entrepreneurial journey and the shakeouts I've had over the years of my own company, you know, a few years ago, we lost $1 million client. And that was like devastating to me after spending years and years of building a multi-million dollar company and offices and people. I took that so hard emotionally. And through the restructuring of the organization and sort of my own mindset, I built a sense of resiliency that I don't even think I knew I needed before that all happened. So when the pandemic came around, it was sort of like, well, another obstacle. I mean, I feel like once you overcome a huge one, it did get easier for me. You know, I'll say that. So we've actually been okay. You know, we have one client pulled back that's now slowly coming back. Luckily, and it is luck, let's give luck credit where it's due, and we were positioned with clients who weren't really subject to, you know, consumerism. So, you know, it was all kind of staples that people needed anyway. So, yeah, I mean, overall, doing okay. And now, look, every dip is massive opportunity in disguise. So now we're looking at all the opportunities and how we can come out the other side even better.
100%. I feel like, because I do business consulting, and just seeing the company I work with, there's such a growth opportunity for recruiting people. I feel like you really honed in on that. Like with every dip, there's like a massive gold rush of opportunity there. And I'm glad you're thinking in terms of, hey, don't think of it as a challenge. Think of it as fun. Like think of it as something that you can grow with the times and build your brand and get ahead of the game.
Absolutely.
So real quick, let's dive right into it. With that being said, you know, how your book, Honest to Greatness, right? And it has a lot of principles that really hone in on how to overcome limiting beliefs and how to just be brutally honest to build that trust and to establish that relationship to become more successful with your business and moving forward. So just tell me a little bit about that. And personally, how do you teach your clients to overcome their limiting beliefs?
Yeah, that really is the question. I mean, the number one thing, Steve, is we all have to come to a realization that we lie. I mean, we're all a bunch of no good, dirty liars. Sometimes we lie to each other, but mostly we lie to ourselves. And we lie to ourselves in two different directions. One is, I'm going to be a billionaire, even though, you know, I don't know the least of all things about starting a business and becoming a billionaire, right? That's as much of a lie as, oh my gosh, I can't sell and I'm horrible at marketing. And really, it's just a confidence issue. That's a lie too. So what's funny is, you know, once I built my own multi-million dollar company, and like, I'm sort of a natural born teacher. I come from a long line of teachers. And so, you know, I got right into coaching and helping other entrepreneurs build their businesses. And what shocked me, Steve, was time after time, an entrepreneur would come to me saying, I know I have a sales problem. I know I have an operations problem. Turned out they had a problem between the ears. You know, it was a mindset problem. It was a confidence problem. It was an assumptions problem. It was a self-limiting belief problem. And, you know, it takes a couple layers. The first is having someone see the problem for what it is challenge number one, right? Oh, there are other issues that I didn't even know were present, much deeper issues. Just the awareness of that is oftentimes a huge step in the right direction for people who are open-minded enough to get a coach in the first place, right? Because there's some form of natural selection there too. And the second thing is it allows people to open up much more deeply into what's actually going on in their life that's fueling some of these challenges. You know, and I've been this time and time again. I mean, to take you back to 17-year-old Peter, at 17, I had been figure skating for a decade and a half. I was very serious. I was convinced I was going to go to the Olympics. That was the first thing I was convinced of. And the second thing I was convinced of at 17 was that I was going to go to Harvard, right? Like those were just two things that were going to happen in my life. I was on that track, never considered anything different. Well, by 18, I had missed the Olympics. And I got, you know, I applied to Harvard and I got a nice letter back saying, you know, thank you, but no thank you. You know, don't call us, we'll call you. And so now I find myself, you know, completely derailed off my life plan. And although I got over it on the surface, what I realized like a decade later was that that failure had actually festered, developed this massive chip on my shoulder that I was carrying around everywhere I went. And I didn't fully come to terms with that, Steve, until I turned 30 and had my next crisis. I don't know if this has happened to you. It's a terrible thing to have happen, by the way, turning 30. That was like a full-on quarter-life crisis for me. And I looked around and listen, by then I had built, you know, a multi-million-dollar company. I had just gotten married. I mean, my life was fine. It just wasn't anywhere near the big lofty goals I had started my life with, right? So I really had to get honest with myself about what I even wanted out of life and where I was honestly trying to go, what was important to me, and all these big sort of life decisions I, you know, was forced to grapple with. And, you know, to come full circle, what deeply helped me during that time was getting into a group of other entrepreneurs that we could go beyond the business stuff, you know, beyond talking about sales strategy and operations and marketing, but more into, you know, what's going on with us that's preventing us from achieving our own greatness, from taking the steps we know we need to take. And so actually now I run a forum, a group of entrepreneurs. We meet once a month by Zoom. We're actually meeting tonight. And we get into the shit, like the best stuff that's happening to us and the absolute worst stuff that's happening to us. Some things they don't even share with their spouses, but they come to a confidential place that they can say, you know, this is really what's bothering me and deal with it, so that it doesn't come out when you're working with a client or an employee or a vendor, and that these things get brought up and dealt with. And that to me has been the most interesting part of entrepreneurship. You know, coming out of college, I would have told you, well, this is great and logical. You have spreadsheets and revenue and profit and loss and number of prospects in the pipeline. This all makes sense. Nobody prepares you for the fact that business is 10% about the business part, 100% about people, and 1,000% about the self. And no, I'm not a mathematician, but I know now from experience that that math works out. And I just, to this day, find it interesting that I've had to sort of get honest about, you know, what the entrepreneurial journey even is in going through kind of all the trials that I've gone through.
Fair enough. You mentioned something really powerful there. That's a great snapshot. If you had to like summarize your life story in a little bit, we can get into that even more. But you mentioned something where you said, you mentioned it's 10% about your business. You know, it's 100% about the people and 1,000% about the self. That's really powerful because I challenge a lot of people that I interview and have conversations with, you know, how do you give value? Do you start building the best version of yourself and then kind of take that and then fill other people's cup and be selfless? Or do you be selfless first and then based on the value that you're giving, tailor yourself into, you know, that person?
So I take a page out of the airlines book, which is put your oxygen mask on first. It kills me when I see people on social media who have created motivational accounts and they're out motivating everyone else, but they've never done anything really. And the people they're motivating haven't done anything because there's no kind of structure and rhyme or reason or like actual knowledge being conveyed there. It's like people needing motivation, motivating other people who need motivation. So I, you know, unfortunately, and it makes me sad, I think there's a lot of just like emptiness out there that drives a lot of people's content. And that's because they're focused on, oh yeah, I'm going to be mission oriented. I'm going to serve others. And like, that all sounds awesome. But what I've found, Steve, is that folks who serve themselves first, who nourish their own soul first, who get their own finances in place first, they have a, you know, a stable foundation to then go and actually make a difference in the lives of others without either, you know, an interim feeling of emptiness and, you know, a feeling of imposter syndrome, or just a fundamental inability to help others because you haven't helped yourself yet. You know, it's sort of, and we see this all, you know, all over Instagram too. You know, gurus who grew social media followings with cat memes now teaching people about business. It's like, well, wait a minute, you've never owned a business. So, you know, there's that, being someone who speaks about and writes about honesty, of course, bothers me, you know, on a core values level. And, you know, it's part of my whole platform of telling people, hey, look behind the scenes. Try not to let your emotions guide you towards things that you like and trust on a gut level without asking yourself, honestly, like, what do you actually need? What kind of, what type of mentor? What type of coach? You know, how serious are you about making change? Or do you just want to feel good that you bought this $99 course and you scratch the itch that you had to start a business? Like, it's not how growing a multi-million-dollar company works. So, you know, honesty, as you can see, as we kind of unwrap the layers, it pervades everything we do. You know, how much we lie or don't lie about, you know, what's going on around us, what we honestly need to do to get into what I call honest alignment with what we really want.
You mentioned about entrepreneurship, right? You mentioned about entrepreneurship and how to grow. You need teachers. You need that right coaching. You need the right people in your life, but you need the right people speaking to you. So personally, with all these cat meme entrepreneurs on social media these days increasing 1,000-fold, it seems, how does somebody who's first starting out, who wants to really build a brand and build, you know, a unique message, how do they find the right entrepreneur, the right mentor for themselves, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I would say first and foremost, understand the information coming at you. Know when you're being marketed to. Know when someone's trying to influence you and like pull on your gut instincts. If you see an you know, I'll tell you what. So I've been an entrepreneur for now a long time. I know a lot of entrepreneurs that have $10 million businesses, $50 million businesses, $100 million businesses. They are not the ones on Instagram talking up their Lamborghini. Never, 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 not once. So there are certain things you need to ask yourself, like, does a legitimate business person always take selfies of themselves and their Ferrari? Probably not. You know, there aren't many of those out there. So, you know, even, or you know, I'll give you another one, because I was on a podcast the other day talking about real estate, and there's all kinds of gurus, like, you know, make money at home in your pajamas, 10 grand a month, without ever talking to a buyer or a seller or a real estate agent, or even breathing half the time. And it's like, that's obviously not a thing. Like, people need to be a little more sharp about, you know, how does business happen? And I don't care if that's watching Shark Tank or getting an Ivy League MBA, it can be anywhere in between. But I think it makes me sad when folks kind of fall into the traps of like, well, that person has a Lamborghini and I want a Lamborghini, so obviously I need to do what they're doing. It's like, well, let's back up and ask, like, did they rent the Lamborghini? Do they rent the jet on the runway and take a couple pictures with it? There's unfortunately so much dishonesty out there, ergo why I wrote a book about it. And I'm shocked that I even had to write a book about something we learn in kindergarten. But again, you know, it saddens me when well-meaning people who want to carve out a living for themselves, who want to take their family to Disney World every year, who want to build a cash flow that brings them 20 or 30 or 50 grand a month. Those are all possible things, but unfortunately not in the get rich quick ways that social media has allowed.
How does an entrepreneur build up credibility? You, because you mentioned, right, you know, there's a lot of people who take selfies with their Ferraris or perhaps, you know, near a jet, a private jet on a runway. So how do you build credibility the right way as an entrepreneurship? But do it the right way, but also do it efficiently.
I mean, I'll tell you the way I did it, you know, because I think the smart people out there will dive behind the social media profile, behind the person's, you know, glitzy website, and ask, like, what did this person actually do? You know, did they build a following with a motivational account, or did they build a following because they built, you know, a $10 million business? The way I thought about Steve, as soon as I figured out, like, I want to go into coaching, you know, I want people to be able to Google me and see a legitimate person, I looked at what other legitimate people have. You know, they have a website. Great. Need one of those. They've been featured in Forbes and Inc. and Huffington Post. Great. Did all that. They usually have a TEDx talk. Did one of those. Sometimes they're an author. Wrote a book. You know, figured out how to get a literary agent. Figured out how to get a publisher. By the way, I'm teaching all of that for free in my Facebook group. So I can send you the link for the show notes, because I think it's important that other people don't go and struggle through, you know, 4 years that it took me to figure out how to write a book, when they can just get all my templates and do it for free. So, you know, I think the same thing with like an MBA, right? I had built a multi-million dollar business and then went to get an MBA at Columbia, because I just look at these pieces of credibility as assets I will always have. I will always have those things. I will always have those credentials. And I've always sort of thought about credentials and legitimacy as assets, you know, as assets like a house or a stock or a bond or anything else. And those were important to me, both from a reputation standpoint going forward, but also just because it aligns with who I am. And this is part of my turning 30 and needing to be honest about, like, what kind of person am I? You know, and one of those biggest things was, I am an author. I am an author of a nonfiction business book. Like, it's just who I am. It's in my bones. And so I set out to figure it out and do it. And now you're going to get it this fall, this summer.
100%. I mean, stay tuned for the launch there. But in regards to, I want to ask, right? Because a lot of people are like, they see, it's almost like it's perceived backwards, right? Like, if they think that something's free, like if you're giving somebody free value, it's almost like there's a back end where it's like, okay, hold on. There's like $100 product coming. I know it. There's like $200 product coming. So like, why give free value to people, in your opinion? Maybe you just answered it, but could you just go into a little bit more behind, like, your core motivations of why you do what you do?
Well, it's funny you ask, because typically in the entrepreneurs I coach, I don't let them use the F word at all. And the F word is free, right? It's like, if you do a good enough job, solving a need or a problem, then you should be able to get a sale, whether that takes time and relationship building, or you're an e-com site and takes 2 seconds, or what. The reason I did this for my book launch is twofold. One, I think authors are a very passionate group who have a mission to share with the world. And so I'm all about sort of empowering that movement. Again, because I have the credentials and I've been here, not because I'm a nobody, you know, empowering other people. And it genuinely took me 4 years of figuring out, how do you structure a book? What is a chapter outline? How do you get an agent? How do you get a publisher? How do you get a forward writer? How do you get Barbara Corcoran to endorse your book? You know, these are all things that I've had to figure out from scratch. And so I said to myself, if I can build a community of folks who have either written or want to write a book of their own, and I can help them out, who knows what I can do with that community down the road? I'm already starting to bring guest authors in to do little bits and pieces. Maybe in the future, a guest author will feature me on their platform, and I can get them into this group and feature them on this platform. For sure, Steve, this is strategic, right? There's a value in this for me. But I always believe in win-win-wins, right? It's like, I need to win, my audience needs to win, and then, you know, I can absolutely help a third party, whether it's another author or my publisher or whatever, also win. I think if we all were more thoughtful about setting up frameworks like that and believing that triple wins were even possible, we would all do much better as a society. You're a negotiator, right?
Yeah,
that's so right. So you know, it's not about positions, it's about interests. Figuring out what people want and figuring out a solution to get everyone exactly what they want. And I'm a firm believer that there is always a way.
It's being able to identify the right problem and what they care about most, so you can tailor the solution to that specific person.
Yep, that's right.
Really, it's really a lot of value right here. I want to take people into your TEDx talk. And I want to just like role play it a little bit, you know, the big stage, like how many people there were there roughly at this TEDx talk that you gave?
You know what? It wasn't that big. It was a smaller one in Virginia, maybe 100 or 200 folks in the audience. But yeah, it was great. And surprisingly, I have never been more nervous for a keynote. Now, mind you, I spent 15 years in an ice cold rink in tights falling on my ass. And the TEDx talk was still, I think, the only thing that's been more rattling than that. And I don't know why. I think it's because I was applying and trying to get a TED talk for so many years that I think finally getting one, I was like, well, this is it, right? You know, three cameras, lights, audience. I mean, there's no messing up. So yeah, it was nerve wracking, but did great. It felt really good to be done once I was finished with it. And yes, now a big part of the resume that I have a lot of pride in because I worked really hard to get it.
100%. And definitely a lot of prep work there. Did you go to like a Toastmasters club? Did you have a speech coach help you prepare that TEDx speech you gave?
You know what? I was such a kind of jack of all trades growing up. I mean, I wasn't just a figure skater. I was also in theater. So I was always sort of out there performing. I was used to it. And I don't mind talking. I have a big ego. I feel like I have a lot to say, you know, even though my wife prefers I would shut up sometimes. I like sharing messages and I like teaching, remember. So that's all part of the same thing, you know, packaging up concepts and bringing them down into bite-sized pieces and helping people kind of take steps in their lives is what really fulfills me. You know, it's my largest core value is enlightenment, you know, both enlightening myself and those around me.
What would you think, in your opinion right now, if you had to stop right now and take a look at everything you've done in your life, what do you think to you has been the biggest accomplishment up to this point?
Probably finding my wife. we met through figure skating. If you met her, you'd be like, Peter, how did you get her? Like, I'm way overchicked. So that's probably my biggest accomplishment. I'd say the second biggest is probably everything I've done with Gem, my largest business. I mean, it's just been through so many pivots, so many changes, so many ups and downs, so much incredible success, and so many, you know, horrible valleys. And I think just weathering a storm like that, it's weathering the entrepreneurial war. I mean, it really is. So I think not to have pride in that would be dishonest.
I think putting a cherry on top, not to, you know, keep embellishing it. I think being endorsed by Barbara Corcoran, Shark on Shark Tank, I think that's pretty cool, to be honest.
That was very cool. Yes. I actually got to work on one of Barbara's businesses when I was at Columbia and got to meet her, and she's awesome. Talk about a brutally honest person. And what's funny, Steve, is as I've become this speaker and writer about honesty, which, by the way, I never, like, if you had told teenage me that's where I was going, I would have been like, you're full of shit. Like, there's absolutely no way. But I've just seen over and over again that when it comes to producing outcomes in business and personal life, profits, honesty really does matter. And to your point, I mean, Barbara Corcoran was a perfect example of that. She just couldn't be more authentic and honest and tell it like it is. They're just, every time we don't do that, Steve, we lose opportunities to be better, to communicate better, to find ways forward in a pandemic, in a society, you know, torn apart by gender bias and racial discrimination and everything else. I mean, the time for honesty is now.
100%. I agree with that 100%. I feel like I'll pose a question to you as well. Why does it take something really shocking, a tragedy or some big event, to try and get us to reevaluate where we're going and really reflect on who we are as people? Like, why does it take something as big as that to start asking those questions about ourselves?
Because we're lazy. Because change is painful, and it's easier to just go along with the status quo of whatever we're doing. And I've always been sort of aware in the back of my mind that, like, I need to keep learning, keep growing. I naturally like change. But I would say most folks don't, you know. And in the organizations I've worked in, you know, as clients, in the organizations I've observed and done case studies about in my book, I can tell you that the ones who are obsessed with continually being brutally honest with changing trends, with their team members and how they're doing or not performing, with themselves as individuals and organizations, the ones who just turn the treadmill of honesty, they end up creating stratospheric results, far outperforming their peers and dominating their industry. And it's just by, you know, avoiding the status quo, avoiding the natural laziness we all have to assume like, oh, that headline on Facebook must be true. That's terrible that that happened. It's like, well, that's clickbait. Did you, you know, investigate it further to understand whether someone's trying to persuade you or not? Or, you know, like we need to be more proactive about the truth and lies that we're faced with because we live in a society where people with short-term mindsets have used dishonesty to gain. Now, I actually think we're at a tipping point. I don't think it's going to be like that forever. And the reason is, you know, even if you look at the horrendous murder of George Floyd that just happened, that was filmed on video. We all got to see what really happened. It's very difficult to hide things when there's a video out there. And if we think there's not someone somewhere filming pretty much everything going on in the world, then we're lying to ourselves. And in a world like that, with what I call, you know, super transparency, there will be a disincentive to do anything but be honest and transparent as a leader, because they're just going to find you out anyway.
100%. You really hit the nail on the head right there, because it's everything's so out in the open, right? And it translates to every facet, every aspect of life. Like, to hone in, you know, on success, right? You talk a lot about honesty, obviously, right? And speaking the honest truth, what do you think are some of the most common traits that you've seen with successful entrepreneurs like yourself, Barbara Corcoran, you know, Dan Pena, Mark Cuban, guys, people like that who transform lives and give massive value? What do you think are the common traits that entrepreneurs should start to adapt and start to hone in on?
You know, one of the stories I tell in the book is about Bethany Frankel, who went from, you know, broke living in a Manhattan apartment to becoming a housewife of New York on reality TV to building a $100 million alcohol brand. And she did it with three little words that leaders somehow seem allergic to. And they're this: I don't know. Every time something happens around her that she doesn't understand, she stops and she asks, I don't know. I don't know what that means. Tell me what that means. In fact, I met Bethany. I did a story about her for Inc. magazine, and we were at Adweek New York a couple years ago, I'm sorry. And we're backstage and we do the interview, and she's telling me, like, I'm just really honest about those things. Like, I don't pretend to know. If I don't know, I want to know. So then I'm watching her on the panel like 15 minutes later, and there's like a bunch of dudes and Bethany Frankel, ad executives, and one of the ad executives uses a marketing term that she doesn't know. And she stopped the entire panel, moderate, like stood up, like, stop, everyone, like, stop the discussion. I don't know what that means. What does that mean? In front of like 500 people. And she really lives it, you know, and she's obsessed with getting clear on what she doesn't know. Now, you can imagine, Steve, you have two different people. One person assumes they know it all and is therefore closed-minded to, you know, absorbing new information and changing. And another is completely perfectly fine knowing that they're a dumb shit, you know, as Ray Dalio at the largest hedge fund in the world says, I'm a dumb shit, right? And because they have this mindset, they're continually learning and they're open to what comes toward them. And I've found that, you know, honesty does not always mean telling the truth. In fact, there are a lot of situations where that's a really bad idea. That's not what it means. But honesty does mean open-mindedness, willing to admit fault, ready for change. You know, that all of those important concepts to me are wrapped up in, you know, what is strategic honesty and how do we use it to produce outcomes? And that's what I think Bethany Frankel, Ray Dalio, Jay Farner, Quicken Loans, Russell Wiener, Domino's Pizza, you know, all these incredible leaders that I profile in the book, they have that single trait in common, which is they are open to knowing what they don't know.
Very being vulnerable, right? Embracing the fact that they suck. It's almost like I actually, I had a mentor when I first was starting consulting, right? He said, don't be a know-it-all, Steve. Be a learn-it-all. And it stuck with me when it, like, you hit it right there, right? But I guess the question to follow up on that is, why do you think it's so hard for people to be vulnerable and ask questions and try to, you know, expand their knowledge and get that value to grow?
You know, I can't speak for everyone else, but I'll speak for myself. I mean, in my 20s, I mean, I was a total jerk and a total know-it-all. I had to learn how to be vulnerable and honest and open. And the thing that helped me was getting into a group of entrepreneurs that, you know, we are just committed to vulnerability, you know, pushing past the, yeah, everything's great, my business is fine, oh yeah, everyone's happy. Like, no, everyone's not happy. Everyone probably hates your guts and one of your clients is going to leave and you're probably verging on being broke. And like, unless we, you know, as I said earlier, unless we confront these things and learn to embrace vulnerability and see the power in it, then the better we'll end up. You know, I've had to learn to be a listener and to keep my mouth shut. And, you know, now I pride myself on being the quiet one that sits in a conversation, a room full of people, and just absorbs what's coming at me. And invariably, what now happens is people have learned to know that when I speak and say something, it has already been thought out. It has already been, you know, considerate of everyone's perspective. So I'm the last person that everyone turns to and says, what do you think? And then I get to say much more intelligently, here is what I, you know, what I believe should occur and here's why. And it's because I heard you say this and I heard you say that. And I think those are good ideas and here's how we can bring them together. And I, you know, there's so much power in sitting back and observing the orchestra rather than trying to dance around and play all the different instruments, thinking that you're a master. That's not the way to take in a symphony and understand the deeper meaning of what's going on around you.
Bruce Lee once said, the most powerful person in the room, well, I got a cuckoo clock in the background there, but most powerful person in the room is the person who observes, sees, and listens. And I think that really hones in to, you know, being an active listener and putting your ego at the door, saying that, hey, I don't have all the answers, but if I hear enough, you know, if I hear enough feedback, then I can formulate my opinion and it'll resonate with people more because you're able to understand everyone's perspective.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I just had to grow up. That was part of my growing up and understanding, you know, what kind of person did I want to be? You know, if I want, so here's the thing, Steve, I always wanted to be the smartest person in the room. I just misunderstood what that meant. I had to learn what the smartest person in the room does, how he or she acts, and then emulate that. You know, that to me was just part of my learning process and how to be an adult, you know, considerate, effective human being.
I'm still learning that too. Sometimes I'm quick to judge, and you know, I sometimes say something that, you know, it just comes out wrong and a lot of people misunderstand it. So I'm definitely working on that also. But in that regard, I wanted to talk more about building a brand, right? Because, you know, with Gem Advertising, obviously you went through some valleys. Obviously you had a lot of successes as well. So a question I have for you is like, what are some of the routines you do personally to get your mind right and allow you to really tackle your day and to have control of your day?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in run the systems and let the systems run you and everything else. So, you know, I keep a checklist of Google tasks, you know, next to my Gmail. Everything I do, you know, I run multiple companies and projects. Everything comes to one central inbox. Everything that gets turned into a task. Tasks are put up and prioritized every morning, and then I just run down the list. I don't think about what to do next. I don't take emergencies. Like, I run my list. I run my system. What that does is allow me to be super efficient because I've already decided the time to tackle those emails is in this section, and the time to do, you know, that activity is in that section. And I think, you know, people lose a lot of productivity in reacting to what's coming to them versus proactively structuring and planning your day. I mean, a lot of the work I do with entrepreneurs, I'm just about to do another coaching gig with an entrepreneur who needs to pivot his business. And one of the first things we need to do that I find myself doing a lot is like, what do you even want to do with your life? Like, what is your ideal day look like, a week or where are you living? I'll do workshops, Steve. And in fact, I'm about to do one this weekend in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're doing an ideal life exercise. Invariably, every time I do this, someone will have written down like, oh yeah, I want a business where I can work, you know, 6 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week. That would be amazing. And they're like so proud of themselves. They're like, wow, so cool. Cause now I work, you know, 9 hours a day, 8 days a week. So I say to them, and I'm telling you, this happens every time I run this. That's interesting. I'm wondering why you don't want to work like 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. And they'll kind of look at me and be like, yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that'd be amazing. But like, that's not, you know, nobody can do that. It's not possible. I'm like, what are you talking about? Of course it's possible. There are businesses you can build and structure in such a way that you are only working 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. But people fail to get honest with themselves that that is even possible. I mean, what a self-limiting belief. They fail to find entrepreneurs who have done it. And there are plenty. I know plenty. So, you know, these ideal life scenarios for each one of us is out there. And I'm constantly amazed by the amount of bullshit we put in between that ideal life, business, spouse, family, whatever, and ourselves for no reason other than we've just decided that it belongs there. It's baffling.
So you bring up a lot of good points. There's a lot of value in that message, right? Being very systematic, it takes the emotions out of, you know, business decisions and allows you to skyrocket your productivity, be more efficient. It's a very stoic approach in that regard. So to follow up with that, perhaps you answer it, but I'll say it anyway, it's on my mind. When, let's say you're building a brand, right? You're building a brand, you're ready to launch, you know, you're ready to launch maybe a partnership or a really big high ticket client, right? You're getting ready for something big. So my question is, being a brand and having to have creative thought, having to have that creative freedom to grow, how do you keep that creativity without losing your ability to meet deadlines?
I mean, you know what's funny, Steve, is when we transitioned from video production company to full service agency, we did it because we were making television commercials for local car dealers. That's how we started. And it is exactly as glamorous as it sounds, which means not at all. And we were getting hired by other agencies who we felt didn't do a really great job by their clients. I mean, they overcharged, they missed deadlines, their creative wasn't that particularly good in our estimation. And we said to ourselves, you know, this is crazy. We're gonna death by a thousand cuts here selling $800 videos. Why don't we go sell a $200,000 a year agency, you know, fee. And then we did, you know, we've got our first $250,000 client and then more $250,000 and $1 million clients and so on and so forth. And one of the things we always said to clients was, hey, you know how other agencies come in and they talk about their creative process and how they go out and they take pictures of flowers and they put them on boards and they do like, hey, by the way, that's all kind of bullshit. It's usually like one or two or three people in a room that are just talking about like, all right, what do we think we're going to do with that client? Well, that's an interesting idea. Well, let's Google that. That's pretty much it. And instead, we hung our differentiator hat on the fact that we were going to be much more process-driven and much more outcome-driven. Like, while everyone's trying to make you a really pretty website, we're going to be focused on, hey, what happens when the leads come in? What are your salespeople saying? Is that on brand or not? Hey, there's a salesperson over here who says they're the cousin of one of your employees and they've been sucking for like a year. Why don't you fire them? Like, we wanted to be much more involved in our customers and their outcomes. And, you know, I really wouldn't have it any other way. Now, what's surprising, Steve, is we've worked with clients who have opened the gates to us and been like, that's great. Come do that work. And for those clients, we've grown them by 500%. I mean, just like hit it out of the park. Other clients who are less willing to admit that they have holes in their processes or don't really want to rock the boat too much or say they want to revamp their marketing but really just want a 1 degree shift, they've ended up just being terrible clients and we've completely failed with them. And over the years, I've struggled to identify those folks because in some way or another, they truly believed they wanted to make changes. They just, for some reason, internally, mindset, couldn't do it, right? And that's made me sad because the road forward is logic, it's business, it's rationality, right? It's dollars and cents. So I'm always sort of fascinated, and this is what my book came out of, Honest to Greatness, with the leaders who allow personal whim and emotion and bias and ego to get in the way of making millions and millions of dollars. And I would never have believed it if you told me, you know, in undergrad, hey, this is a thing, this is what you're going to observe. I would never have believed you. I would have been like, why would someone deny what their customers are saying and pretend otherwise? It doesn't make any sense. But Steve, I have seen it over and over and over, and it shocks me every time. And it's fun, if you ask me, it's fundamentally dishonest.
These $250,000 clients, you know, in terms of entrepreneurship, I kind of think of it like baseball, right? For me, I used to play baseball growing up a lot, right? And there's the game aspect to it. There's the glory between, you know, there's the glory and diamond. You step on the field, you know, you hit that home run at the plate and, you know, you get the game-winning home run, you make the game-saving catch. But a lot of people almost don't understand the reality of being an athlete, right? There's the travel, there's the constant traveling, there's the sacrifices you have to make. So like, just give people listening in who are, you know, young entrepreneurs that have almost like a misrepresentation of, you know, not being able to put in any work, you know, falling for one of these scams, say, right? You know, how much work did you have to do to prepare to pitch these, you know, $250,000 clients, these $1 million clients to really hit home? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, it was a ton of work, and it was a ton of the wrong kind of work. And, you know, in the agency business, which if I understood it better in my young 20s, I would have built a very different business. It was a lot of work in the wrong direction. And I think that's, you know, one of the things I had to learn the hard way is I spent years and years and years toiling away, going to networking events till 9 and 10 o'clock and doing the after drinks to build relationships and, you know, so on and so forth for years, only to be like, oh, this isn't even that good of a business. I mean, like, this takes employees and like time. And meanwhile, you know, now I have a network of entrepreneurs and multi-million dollar companies. To my point earlier, they're like, yeah, I only work like 2 hours a day because I've, you know, this is how my business is set up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's such a better business. Like, they built a better business. And, you know, I think I've had to learn the hard way what even makes for a good business. This is, again, something that not enough first-time entrepreneurs understand. Is it's not just like, oh, I'm going to take my passion and build a business around it. It's like, no, that is a classic entrepreneur mindset. And what I encourage my coaching clients to have is an investor mindset, which is, how do you buy a cash flow that is consistent and has a margin of safety and is not subject to coronavirus and all this other crap, and that you don't have to hire a ton of employees and you don't have to have offices. Like, listen, I did the employees and multiple offices in multiple states and countries. And like, I used to think in my 20s, wow, that's a sign of success, isn't it? Well, now in my 30s, I'm like, I don't want any of that, right? If I could have a business that does $1.2 million in gross revenue, but $1 million in profit, I am happy all day long. You can have your $20 million business that has $19,576,000 in expenses and all the headaches, you can have it, you know, because I've just learned so much more about how to structure a cash flow, and it comes from having an investor mindset. Like, what does an investor want to know about a business or not? Very different way of looking at it than, I would say, 90%+ of entrepreneurs. Now, some get lucky, right? I've seen entrepreneurs get lucky. They just happen to be in the right place, right time. They built the business the right way. They met the right person, got the right first client that kept referring them. And I don't want to downplay the role that luck has in this, because one of my issues with podcasts like these and listening to quote unquote successful people and gurus is that they rarely talk about how lucky they got. And I can talk to you about, you know, 1,000 times where a decision was made that could have gone either way and it went in our favor. Now, of course, there were 1,000 times where it didn't. But all those lucky interactions, and you can argue, you know, is it luck? Is it divine intervention? Is it, you know, opportunity, you know, the crossroads of opportunity and preparation? You can call it whatever you want. But at a certain point, someone who's going to build a successful multi-million dollar business, there has to be a couple lucky breaks in there to make it all work. It's just, it's too hard otherwise.
100%. Would you, Vince Lombardi, I think he said this quote where he said, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. So It's really putting that work in, researching, having the systems in place. Would you say having the systems in place, obviously that comes down to mentorship and just trying to troubleshoot so you can get that ideal structure that can help you automate your business flow, your cash flow?
Yeah, I think it's the consistent pursuit of knowledge and wisdom. And that comes in a lot of instances from a mentor. That's certainly the shortcut. And, I mentor entrepreneur groups. And then, of course, I have my own coaching clients who are entrepreneurs. And I mean, I talk to founders all the time who are like, yeah, no, I think I'd rather trial and error, and I'm smart, I'll figure it out. And it's like, hey, good luck. I mean, I did that. And is it possible? Yes. But it has cost me years and millions of dollars. And I, you know, talk about honesty and bias. Entrepreneurs are a wonderful set of people because they believe they can. That's why they go start a business in the first place. But my gosh, I can't tell you how many times someone has spent 10 grand for a mentor and saved themselves $1 million. Show me a return on investment like that. Anyone out there is like, I'm going to listen to 100 podcasts a week, but I'm not going to pay a mentor because that's silly. Like, really ask yourself, did Michael Jordan get to where he was without a coach? I mean, come on. It's sort of ridiculous.
What do you think, in your opinion, is the biggest strength that's enabled you to be as successful as you are today?
Oh gosh, what a good question. I think the ability to move quickly. I'm going to pick that one. Every time we've faced a hurdle or come up against a wall, we have just taken massive action and fast. And I think that ability compounded over many projects, many clients, many years, allows you to swim faster than the current. And that's really what this is. You know, we're all fish in a stream. Everyone's going. And the question is, can you swim faster and in the right direction to get to the promised land? And that comes down to speed, intuition, intelligence, you know, to know where to swim and how quick and where to dart and where not to. I think that being able to pivot and, you know, spotting the wave and going and catching it is really, really important. That's probably kept me afloat. The other thing I'd say, Steve, is I have always had my fingers in multiple pies. When my platform business wasn't doing well, my coaching business was. When that wasn't doing well, my real estate business was. When that wasn't doing well, my equity portfolio was doing well. Like, I've always set up my life as backups to backups to backups, because I figured if shit hits the fan, I have somewhere to fall back to. And that's actually, to give you a, you know, super preview into the future, my next book is going to be about how people can operate their personal lives like a business, you know, and think about things like customer service and sales and marketing and operations, but integrate those into your personal life. You know, how you live and work and drive a car and find a spouse and all of these things. Because if people were able, and it's very difficult, to strip emotion out of those types of things, and again, come with an investor business mindset to their decision-making over years and compounding and multiple decisions, the results are just, you know, complete opposite directions from the person who's always wrapped up in their emotional bubble and unable to get out of their own head and reactive.
What's one thing right now, you know, that those are really good strengths to have, right? Being able to have the backups to the backups. It's like it's a Batman mentality almost. You have a contingency plan to the contingency plan to the contingency plan. Yeah. But it really does make sense, and being stoic in that approach. What's one thing, in your opinion, do you think you can improve on?
Who, me?
Yeah, personally.
Oh, gosh, how long do you have, Steve? I thought we were only talking for a little while. That's a big list.
I'm all ears.
Yeah, I think the same thing I credited myself with is the same thing I'm going to name for needs improvement, which is sometimes I'm too fast. I take off running in a direction without taking the extra second that it takes to ask myself, you know, is this really what I want? Does that really make sense? I've gotten much better at that. I really have. And asking more thoughtful questions. But for a long time, that plagued me. Now, as I said earlier, that was also probably one of the things that kept me alive. There's a difference between like running fast in the right direction and running fast because it feels like progress and productivity when it really isn't. And I've had to learn the difference.
What do you think is one thing people misunderstand most about you?
That they take my directness because I have a huge core value of honesty. Obviously, I wrote a book about it. They take my directness as being mean. And it's not mean. I just want people to know where I stand. And I think there's inefficiency in doing anything but being direct with people. Now, I have learned that honesty with others is different than honesty about others. You know, that's where empathy comes into play. You know, how is this other person going to take what I'm about to say? So I've adopted pieces of language that we use in forum in my confidential group of entrepreneurs. I've adopted ways of phrasing things that have greatly helped reduce that impact. Things like, you'll never hear me say, you should, right? That just, it's assaulting, right? To be told you should, I don't know what you should do. I don't know your life, right? I speak a lot from the I now. I heard you say this, or, you know, I heard you say this and it makes me wonder if this, you know, other thing might be better for you. Much more inquisitive and relaxed than, you know, so direct. That said, you know, I have to say I love working with Israelis because they're just like some of the most direct people, and it's refreshing, right? We have this phrase, it's refreshingly honest for a reason, because I never have to wonder where I stand. Unfortunately, you know, we live in a nation of kind of soft people that, you know, in which it's better to be nice and kind than honest. I think in a lot of ways, like as pleasant as that is, it probably hurts us more than it helps. That's my personal opinion.
Do you think we'll ever snap out of this, like PC being super kind, super nice to everybody and just get right to the point? Do you think we'll ever get back to that, those kind of like old fashioned values?
Well, I think one of the many reasons that Donald Trump was elected as our president is because people got tired of all the political correctness. You know, it's like they can't offend this person, can't offend that person. But at a certain point, you're walking on so many eggshells that I think people said, I'm not even going to go walk. It's not even worth it. So I think we're seeing this pendulum swing wildly from, no one can be direct and we all have to be nice too. Wow, that's really direct and that's probably hurtful as well. So, you know, I think we'll arrive somewhere in the middle. And I also think, which you know, I love, we're having a lot of honest conversations right now that we have not really dug into that are absolutely necessary. Gender bias, racial discrimination, you know, all these big things we need to be honest about as a society and fix as a society, you know, as a community. And that's going to involve having conversations around language and appropriateness. But I have to say, what I want to see from the perspective of someone who champions honesty is honesty on both sides. Like, should we respect someone's gender pronouns? Of course, we should respect however someone wants to be referred to. But should we hate people for having spent 40 years of their life using he and she, and now they can't use they? No, that doesn't make a lot of sense, you know. especially if there's no harm intended. And I think, you know, back to negotiation, the negotiation table. Everything we do interpersonally as humans is about communication and about negotiation. We're negotiating whether we like each other or not, whether we're getting value from each other or not. And the more we take up positions and we refuse to come off of our soapboxes, the more divided we're going to be. And what's silly is that we all want the same thing. We all want respect. We all want to live our lives. You know, we all mostly don't want to, you know, overly offend people. It's not the intent of most human beings. So yeah, unfortunately, I think we need to have a lot more honest conversations about, you know, about others. You know, that's one of the levels of honesty I talk about in my book. You need to be honest about others, how differently they think, what their perspectives and their childhood upbringing and core values are. Because I think in a lot of ways, we're more different than we expect. And in a lot of ways, we're more of the same than we expect. But it's up to us to explore those.
You mentioned the political soapbox, like people standing on their high horse and representing political parties. Like, do you think that's the problem with politics? Is that there's almost like this sense of, oh, there's a team mentality. Like if you maybe support one other issue that's an opposing view to the party that you stand for, the ideology that you stand for, then you're not with us. You think we judge too quickly with politics when we should be looking at the issues, you know, down the middle and with the facts, with logic.
I mean, of course, we should absolutely be, you know, viewing these things with much more logic, but not just that, with much more open-mindedness. I can't quite explain or even understand, honestly, Steve, how people take up positions and then refuse to allow for any changes of the facts. You know, it's like, this is all tied together, Steve. It's like making money, being open-minded to change, willing to admit when you're wrong and making a shift. This is how investors think. You can imagine if I invest in American Airlines and then they're about to go bankrupt, well, I should probably pull my money out. I wouldn't just stay there. But I find that humans don't, in general, take the same approach. You know, thus the reason why I want to write my next book. They take an approach of like, well, I like this person and I like what they do. And so everything they say is gospel and that's just it. And yeah, it's obviously clearly dangerous to a community like ours. We see it in the divisiveness that faces our nation. And I don't have an explanation for it. It truly surprises and saddens me. And my hope, part of my hope with this book, is someone somewhere reads it and asks themselves, you know, maybe I'm not being quite honest about what I'm seeing on TV and the politics I support and the other people around me and what they might be trying to teach me. Maybe I can help some people. I don't know. We'll see.
That is really powerful. I've thought about that. I don't know if we'll get there within the next few months. It'll definitely take time. In that regard, I mean, we definitely have to really focus more on reflecting on ourselves, who we want to be, and where we want to go with our lives. So to like bring it full circle, it's really just, you know, try to focus on yourself, being the best version of yourself, and then being able to be selfless in that regard.
Yeah, put your oxygen mask on first. Try not to force the other masks down people's throats around you.
That's a nice painting you got in the background right there. Is that New York City?
It's not. It's no particular city, though. I live about 50 miles north of New York. I can see it from my my deck here.
Oh, that's awesome. Right by the water?
Yeah.
Beautiful. My one of my mentors, he actually went to Fire Island. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but he went to Fire Island this weekend, and he said it was just awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's on the south side of Long Island. That's nice.
I've never been there before, but hey, some goals for me. Who knows? I might get a little real estate there. I might, you know, have like a little beach house or something, a little party house down there. But if you had to talk to, say, your younger self, right? Maybe that 17-year-old self, you know, who wanted to be an Olympic figure skater and, you know, wanted to go to Harvard. If you just had any piece of advice to give that younger person, what would it be and why? Knowing what you
stop worrying. Just stop worrying. Stop worrying about being successful. Stop worrying about making money. Like, life is long. There's plenty of time to pivot and make different choices. And as my business partner has always said, worry does not solve anything. So yeah, I think tamping down some of that anxiety, that's what I would go back and tell my younger self.
It's crazy too, because it's like it's almost like we live in a world where our school system says, you know, when we graduate college, we have to have it all figured out. And it's refreshing to have that perspective where it's very, be open-minded. If you go to college, yeah, put everything you have into it, if you want to find a career, find your passions, but it's not like the end of the world, you know, if college doesn't work out for you. I mean, Christ, anyone hear Steve Jobs or Bill Gates and their story?
Or Mr. Zuckerberg? Yeah, on and on.
100%. Any closing comments you have here? Because I think we really touched on a lot about, you know, entrepreneurship, about business, building a brand, but also how to create a strong mindset and really build the best version of yourself. So anybody you want to shout out to, any closing comments?
Yeah, I would say come on over, have an honest conversation with me. I'm on all the social channels, Peter Kozodoy, Kozodoy. If you go to honesttogreatness.com, that's honesttogreatness.com, you can take the honesty quiz. 21 questions will tell you how honest you really are and which honesty type profile you fit into. So if you're brave enough, you can check that out. And I hope you'll pick up a couple copies of the book. For the book launch, I have so many things happening. I have a bonus page where if you buy multiple hardcover copies, if you are an entrepreneur, I'm giving away classes that I've taught around all kinds of amazing topics. I'm giving away consulting. I'm giving away membership in Forum, my group for entrepreneurs. I have other programs, so check that out. And definitely pick up a copy of the book and let me know what you think. Don't be shy.
Well worth it. I definitely will get a book, get a copy or two, who knows, but I'll definitely take the quiz. I'll see how honest I really am or am not in that regard. But Peter, it's been a pleasure. This is Steve Zekas, De Sinatra Suave, host of Dominate the Deal, signing off for right now with our great guest, Peter Kozodoy, or Kozodoy, Kozodoy. Kozodoy, got it right. Perfect, perfect. We're signing off for right now. If you want to hear more about him, follow him on his social media platforms. He's on many guest platforms and podcasts as well. So feel free to listen to him and his message, really focusing on yourself, building self-awareness, being fully honest and accountable with everything in your life. Signing off for right now. Until next time, forge your own path, stay strong, stay confident within your mission, and strive towards greatness. Peter, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for hopping on, man.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks, Steve.